Well, I got to tell you that that's a whole lot more excited than I would be if I had seen me step up here. I know that for a lot of you, this was not your idea. This was your parents' idea. They wanted to come to the Tulsa workshop and they drug you here. I understand some of that. Oh, thanks. That'll come in handy when I play music. Oh, there. Yes, the Bible. Yes, the Bible. We might use it. I can remember when I was a boy, my dad was one of these great preachers in the faith, and all these great giants of the faith would come, and every time that they'd do anything, a gospel meeting would be held, you know, 50 miles away, and we'd have to clomp on our pet dinosaurs and ride all the way over, and it was without exception dead boring. It was without exception horrific. And by the time that I was really your age, I only knew one thing for certain. And this is very serious. I knew there was no place for me in this church. None. Because everybody else, they thought different than I did. And they had skills, to use a Napoleon Dynamite type thing. They had skills, and I didn't have skills. And they would say things, they would pray prayers that didn't make any sense to me, like, Lord, be with the sick of this congregation. And I'm thinking, I'm sick of this congregation. And guide, guard, and direct us. And they'd say all these kind of things that didn't really, you know, give us a ready recollection. Words you never heard outside the building. And so it's like visiting a foreign country that I didn't really belong in. And I know what it's like to visit a foreign country. Because I was raised in 7 countries. So I'm not from anywhere. Those of you that are listening very closely can tell that I'm from Detroit. At least for the last 8 years. I'm one of the lone survivors. It's still there. We're hoping the last one to leave Michigan will turn off the lights. It's that bad. We can go blocks and blocks and blocks without passing a house or business that's open. Everything shut, abandoned. I know of 5 houses for sale for $1 near me. It's an amazing situation. So how in the world did somebody who was certain they didn't belong in this church end up in this church? Long story, I'm not going to tell you. But one thing I found out early is that you try to run from God, He will find you. I tried to be an atheist for a couple of years. That didn't work out so well. One was that it was hard. Christmas was difficult. You know, putting up a tree to the birth of nobody in particular. Funerals were sad, you know, all dressed up, nowhere to go. You hit your thumb, who do you call? It was pretty rough. I became a believer again when I was getting my first doctorate, and these were in science, and I realized that there was something there that I had to deal with, and I can still remember the day that I walked into my wee flat there, excuse me, in the southwest of Scotland, and looked up at the ceiling and said, all right, so you're there, but I don't like you, and I don't know what I'm going to do about you. And that began a long wrestling match with God. For the next 3 years, I refer to that 3-year period of my life as God taking me into a dark room and beating me about the head and shoulders. He had to make me into something else. I wasn't one of the people that loved coming to things like this. Sorry. Now, those of you that live for this, you will now feel superior to me because you are. I had trouble with it. I would go to a place like this and there'd be singing and singing and singing. And my mom would look over at my dad. You know, I'd be sitting in between. We're all wearing a suit and a tie because God can't hear you without that. And my mom would say, oh, Belle, don't you think this is what heaven will be like? And I'd be thinking, no. An eternity like this, what are my options? You know, just, I maybe not hell. That's not limbo. I'll take limbo. Is limbo in play? But I never said it out loud because I wanted to live. And my dad made it very often very, very, very plain that he could live without me. And so I wanted to be very careful about the way I phrase things around him. And he might want to baptize me again, but hold me under a bit long if you get my drift. It took me a long time to learn something that I'm hoping I can tell you about in the next 25 minutes or so. And that's this. You are actually a creation made on purpose for exactly this time. Now, for example, snow. You've heard, this will be very easy done, right? You've heard, no 2 snowflakes are alike. You've heard that, right? Look out there. Nobody's checking. Nobody. Nobody's out there. No group of scientists are out there like slackers in a Blockbuster going, seeing it, seeing it, seeing it. They're not doing that. Therefore, I'm not so sure. But here's another one we're not so sure of, because nobody actually counted them. But they say that there are 10 to the 60th power, from where you're looking at, 60th power, atoms in the universe. Now that's a 1 with 60 zeros after it. Do that once for fun, if you don't have that thing, a life. And you'll see how big it is, right? 1 with 60 zeros after it. However, I can take the DNA, and actually I can because that's part of my science work. I can take the DNA from one woman and one man here, and we can mathematically make 10 to the 128th power different individuals with no copies. Now, if you're thinking, all right, 10 to the 60th power, 10 to the 128th power, that's like twice as much. You don't know exponents. Exponents mean that's many, many times more. And this is where I'm getting to. You are many times more unique and interesting and complicated than the universe in which you live. This universe is nothing. Sometimes you'll be standing out. You look up, it's a clear sky and all the stars. I love summer in Michigan. That day is my favorite. And you see at night the stars are out. And, I got to be fair. Spring is beautiful in Michigan because when the gangs come out with their new colors, oh. Anyway, you look at all the stars and somebody will look up there and they'll go, look at the millions of stars so far away. Doesn't it make you feel so small? No. Not even a little bit. That's a rock on fire. I'm over it. That one over there is just a bunch of gas on fire. Nothing. Me, on the other hand, I'm amazing. And so are you. God doesn't intend to make us all the same. So he makes us different. And when he makes us different, he does so, Psalm 139, he does so before we're born. He designs us. Now here's the deal. You ready for the deal? 2 big rules. Everybody gets a gift from God. Nobody gets them all. There's a corollary rule that follows under it. And that is, nobody gets the gifts they want. Sorry. The gifts I wanted to be tall, strong, handsome, and rich. I am 0 for 4. My son is a Marine. He's 6'5". When the doctor did all this stuff and came out and was reading, he's 6'5", size 15 feet, 192 pounds and 3% body fat. And he looked at me and he goes, so who's the father? Right, you shut. Sick him, son. My son and I actually have exactly the same amount of skin. He squandered his in height. I was going for width. I didn't get the body I wanted. I didn't get the mind I wanted. I wanted a normal mind. People, if you could get in my brain, you would pay money to get out. The reason I became a shrink is I knew I would need one, and I wanted to be there when it happened. When I lay on the couch, I tell my wife, I'm not taking a nap, I'm having therapy. Leave me alone. We're near a breakthrough. And I also like it that the ink blots mean whatever I say they mean. But anyway, we like to put out medications and mix them with Skittles just to see what'll happen. But anyway, I didn't want this brain. My wife will tell me that she wants me to think about what I'm saying before I say it. And I tell her, I want to hear it when everybody else does. I want to be surprised. Then I didn't get the voice I wanted. I wanted an FM announcer voice. I didn't want to sound like a Scottish Mickey Mouse on helium. I didn't get that. I wanted athletic ability. I've got 0. I've got all of the, I've got the vertical leap of a stump. I've got nothing. Whenever we play baseball, I'm second base. I'm the base. I am not qualified for this. And then I'll go to preachers' meetings, and I don't fit in. I don't wear enough polyester, for one. But, oh, it is. You could go to preachers' meetings. You can grab one of them, rub them on a carpet, and stick them on a wall. It is amazing. They're up there trying, oh, let me down. Come on, guys. I don't want to wait till it rains. You know, that type thing. But it's still fun. I don't go to those because I don't really fit in. And they're all saying, have you read the book by so-and-so? And did you go here, so-and-so? And did you listen to the podcast of so-and-so? And I'm over there going, no, I don't do that. And they'll ask me what I'm doing. And I'll say, well, I got a wife and I got a church and I'm busy. And I don't do those things. I don't fit in. You might not fit in, but I want to tell you something. That's the whole point. God doesn't want to make one of you and goes, oh, I already had one of them, and toss you. It's kind of like this. I lived in West Virginia, in Morgantown, where the university is, for 8 years. And it was fun, and I enjoyed it. But the church there was full of engineers. Now, engineers are cute as they can be, because they don't know they are. They come in all dressed up like engineers with their little briefcases. And then two engineers would meet and fall in love and decide to have a baby down the road because they'd done all the computer simulations and graphs. And they'd done all of the business plans to have a baby. And I would just know they're coming into my office here fairly soon. And they would. They're sitting there all dressed up in their engineer clothes. And this kid's over here, you know, eating a book. You know, and they're saying, you know, we've been showing flashcards of the great composers and been trying to teach her French. You know, like, there's something wrong with our child. And I would say, no, it's that God looked at you two and went, not doing that again, and made this one. Now, it would go the other way sometimes as well. We'd get a couple of people that had run off into the woods during the Vietnam War and hadn't, you know, they didn't know it was over. You know, and they'd come back down, the long hair, the John Lennon glasses, and the army clothes with peace symbols all over it, and the Birkenstocks. And they're sitting there, and beside them is a 4-year-old reading a Wall Street Journal, you know, wearing a 3-piece suit. And they'd be going, dude, like, there's something, like, wrong with our kid and stuff. And I'd say, you know, God bless you, Dweezil and Moon Unit, but God had one look at you and said, you know, that gene pool could use a wee bit of chlorine. And he's hit the reset button on you. And it's the same with you. You might look around saying, I don't fit in anywhere. You know why? Because God noticed there wasn't one of you yet. And he needed to make you. And there are places I can go and evangelize people that nobody else can because they're too preachy. Where I go, if you look like a preacher, they scatter like wildebeest upon the plain of Serengeti. You know, it's like, oh, you know, you almost hear somebody opens up a Bible and one of the herd goes, you know, and the preacher's going around, well, what happened? Somebody like me walks in. And anyway, I walk in, it's like Norm walking into tears, Patrick, you know. And I took my son-in-law when he moved up to work with us. I took him on one of my typical days. We went into Motor City Music, which is a guitar shop where people like Todd Rundgren and Ted Nugent and Bob Seger hang out and the like. And I'm there all the time and I take people there and we're having a good time. And he was just odd. And then we went from there, went to a gun shop. And talked to a bunch of people there. Then we went to a karate shop and we talked to a bunch of people there. And as we were leaving, he said, Patrick, all we need to do now is find a biker bar. And we've hit every subculture. And I said, ooh, good. We went to a biker bar, which he would, you know, it's really fun. He's so white, you can read through him. And to bring him into one of these, he's, you know, you sit him down. He's trying to talk to them about, you know, the resistance during the German theological stage of the Nazi oppression. And I'm just going, leave him out. It's all right. What's going on in your life? Here it is, friends. You ready for this? God made you on purpose because he needs you. You don't have what you wanted to have. Fair enough. Not one person in this room got the body they wanted. Not one. Not even supermodels. Nope. Supermodels, all they can do is see problems when they look in the mirror. Nobody got the body they wanted. Nobody got the mind they wanted. Nobody got the parents they wanted. Keep your eyes straight ahead. Do not nod. Nobody got the parents they wanted. My son always goes, testify. Well, please, you know, they're going to need therapy too. But again, I'm there for them. I just say, open up the cabinets, take what you want. I have no idea where that came from. That kind of tickled me there for a minute. Anyway, maybe you look around your family and you say, I don't belong in this family. Fair enough. I understand that as well. Most of my family are not Christians. Most of my family are petty criminals, to be quite frank. If you want to meet them, watch Cops. Eventually, they'll pop up. My grandfather and I were very close. Played with him every week. Technically, he was dead. But my parents had him cremated and put his ashes in my Etch-a-Sketch, and so we were able to bond. Oh, stop it. You're back there going, oh, it's awful, and you're going to be telling it before tonight's over. My grandfather is dead, and we did cremate him. In fact, that might be what did it, but the point... Went to see my grandmother the other day because I had to go to the attic anyway. My family and I may not actually match on all cylinders. I'm aware of this. It's because God wanted something new. He wanted something different. Most of your life, you're going to be told to act like somebody else. And it might be in a church. But it's also, let us be fair about this. Don't just kick the church. It is also in your school. If you want to be accepted by this group, you've got to dress like this, you've got to act like this, and you've got to dislike a certain group to be in our group. You know that's true. And you know it's true about school, about sports, about everything. In fact, even the TV shows, you have to like the right TV shows. If all of your friends say, oh, we love American Idol, and you go, oh, I never watch it. What? They're going to look at you and say, that's really good about you being an individual. Now, what's wrong with you? There's something wrong with you. Now, I actually like TV. I know most preachers are supposed to tell you, we don't even own a TV. What is this TV of which you speak? No, I like TV. And there are some things I enjoy to watch. I get hooked on things. I remember my worship minister, a lot of you may know my worship minister, Chris Lindsay, who was the lead singer of Watershed for years. He's our worship minister there at Rochester. So come on up, guys. It's a lot of fun. He gave me the first season of 24 on DVD. He may as well have shoved crack under the door. You know, 3 days later, I'm sitting on the couch in my underwear covered with Cheeto dust going, what? All right, sorry for the visual. I like some things and I don't like other things, and I'm allowed, and so are you. And there are people out there that only you can reach. If they see me coming, they're going to run. It's an old guy. Get out of here. And I understand that completely. I do. I'm never, ever, ever going to say a bad word about teens. I love teens. I love what you've done with our church. I really do. I'm so glad we don't have youth rallies anymore where somebody sings Just As I Am. Oh. You can have two birthdays before you're done with that song. I am so glad that you guys pray better than we prayed. We prayed like British commandos. Get in, do the job, get out. But you guys will pray and you'll actually talk to God. That's really cool. And some of you actually get excited during a song, which we weren't allowed to do. And fair enough, our songs didn't really encourage it. You will get excited at a baptism, and that's wonderful. All my life I wondered about that, because we'd see somebody being baptized. And we're told the angels in heaven are rejoicing, but we weren't allowed to. We're supposed to sit there quietly while a few of the men went, amen. That was it. I can almost see the angels in heaven going, amen. Not impressive. They're probably hooting and high-fiving and, you know, if not dancing, they're at least moving rhythmically to music. They're probably having a good time with this. I want to release you from some things. You don't have to look like the world, and you don't have to look like the churches around you. You don't have to look like everybody tells you have to look like. Be the person God intended you to be. Now, you've got gifts. Everybody in here has a gift at least. You can go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, or you can go to Romans chapter 12. I got to check my time. I always tend to get excited. But it's It's just completely because of the shock therapy. But I get excited still. There are gifts in there. For example, the gifts of faith is in there. You might be a person who just has rock solid faith. We need you. Because there are people around you that if their microwave breaks, they're going to be going, there is no God. And they need you. I had a lady, and I don't want to be unkind, but she was looking at me, how could God let this happen? What was it? She was a lady that had been diabetic for about 30 years and had never, ever followed the advice or dietary pattern. Every time the doctors give her any medicine, she didn't take it. Her house was full of unused prescriptions and also full of big punch bowls full of candy bars, which diabetics aren't supposed to have. The candy bars, they're allowed to have punch bowls. Bits of her had been clipped off because of all of this, and yet she still refused to listen to the doctors. And then when she was taken in because she was now in danger of losing her life, she's blaming God. She needed somebody like me. Because most people don't know how to handle that kind of... I love that. I'll deal with it. And even most preachers will go, well, you know, it's not for us to know the ways of God. And I'm looking at him going, listen, girl, you've been trying to see him every day of your life by the way you've been eating and acting. Just because he's knocking on the door, don't act surprised. I can talk to them. Because she couldn't chase me anyway, you know. Right? You guys are looking at, oh, I don't think that's the way preachers are supposed to talk. That's the point. I didn't think I had a place in this kingdom, and then I found out I did. I could talk to some people. I know science. I love hanging out with atheists. They're so easy. Oh, are you kidding? Here's their story. Once upon a time, there was nothing. Nothing. No, whatever you're thinking, no, nothing. Then there was a bit. A little bit. Floating around. Then there's some other bits, you know. And then they probably didn't make that noise because it was in space and all, but still. And then they were ever so cute because they attracted to each other. And they got bigger and they got more compact. And it's like, they're squeezing each other. And, oh, let go. But they're getting bigger. And it gets smaller and it's smaller. Oh, boom, it blows up. And it's horrific. And fire is everywhere. And things are spinning around. And then here's one spinning. And as it's spinning, it's very hot. Oh, very hot. Don't touch. Now, and it's slowing down just a little bit. Oh, and we have icky bit. There's goo. There's goo on here. And we got a wiggle. There's a wiggle. There's a wiggle in the icky bit. And it's got... Oh, it's got scales and a tail, and it's leaping, and it's having all kinds of fun. And oh, scales fell off. It looked around and said, "I think I'll go for a walk." And legs popped out, and it leapt upon the shore, and hair went all over it, and it ran up trees, and it just went from tree to tree to tree, and the tail fell off, and it shaved, and. Then it came down, and it became an evolutionist. Basically, from goo to you by way of the zoo. Now, the other story is that if you have stuff, you got a guy that made stuff. Like that ever happens. All stuff isn't made, you know. You see, they're so easy. I was in a room once. I was trying to be a good boy. I was there early because I was supposed to teach a class. It was at a major state university. I won't tell you what it was, but it rhymes with Ohio State University. As I was sitting in the back, it was a beginning philosophy class. I could tell because the teacher was wearing tweed with patches. And he looked like he smoked a pipe. So he's riding up there, and I was trying to behave, and even though his philosophy class was trying to teach him, it doesn't matter what you believe, everything is, I'm going, just be quiet. Then he told him the stupid Buddha story. Now that's not the official name of the story, but the story goes like this. Buddha was one day meditating when he fell asleep and he dreamed he was a butterfly. Then he woke up and he thought, am I a man who dreamed I was a butterfly? Or am I a butterfly dreaming I am a man? And all the kids are in there going like this. So my hand went up. He didn't know me. He assumed I was a midlife crisis returnee of some sort. So he called on me. I stood up and I said, well, to form a visual requires about 100,000 synapses. And if you want that visual to be in color and move, you need more than 250,000 synapses. Butterflies, it varies according to the species, but no species has more than 5,000 synapses. Therefore, they cannot form a visual. Therefore, they cannot dream. Therefore, you are a man dreaming you're a butterfly. I sat down. Now, they don't teach you that stuff in preacher school, you see. So if you're thinking, I don't like preacher school, I like science, use it. By the way, he was very frustrated. And he went on about how everything is a figment of our imagination. I said, are you a figment of my imagination? And he said, yes. I said, is the table in front of you a figment of my imagination? And he goes, yes, that's the point. I said, so what would happen if I picked up the table and hit you with it? Would it hurt? Now, that's a very deep philosophical question. And he was getting a headache trying to think of that. So I said, I imagine it would. So he went on a tear for about 15 minutes. I wish you could have been there. Spittle was flying. It was great. About how we can't know anything. So my hand went up. I said, how do you know? People, I found out on that day that God might be able to use me after all. That there might be a reason for this brain and this inability to decide it might be dangerous to speak. But just to go ahead and say it. It's a gift to be you. Let's say you're good at sports. And you love to run. That's really what you like to do is run. I don't like running. I really don't. I ran a mile once. It's the worst 3 hours of my life. I'm not doing it anymore. I have some of my staff run marathons, and they'll say, Patrick, you got to run with us. And I'll say, I have a car and a gun. I have no reason to run. I cannot figure out a reason to do this. But anyway, they run. If that's what you like to do, guess what? My staff, when they run, they meet people and they serve them in the name of the Lord, and some of them become believers. But here's the clue. Don't be nice to them so that they'll become believers. Serve them and love them because they're made in the image of God. Full stop. The believers will show up. People ask me, what's your evangelistic method? It's very, very simple. 3 times a day, minimum, every day of your life, approach somebody you do not know and say, what is the best thing I can do for you right now? And approach somebody else you don't know and say, I'll be praying later. What would you like for me to pray for you about? And go wherever those conversations take you. Do not invite them to church. Do not invite them to have Bible study with you unless they ask. Instead, just do good. And eventually, just like Jesus, you're going to turn around and there's a group behind you. And then they'll say, why are you doing this? And you can talk to them about Jesus. Don't try this for a week and say it doesn't work. You got to do it the rest of your life. And only your people will respond to you. That's how you'll find your people. I go into guitar shops and it's really cool because, you know, I'm sitting there and people whose names you probably know will show up, like Eric Clapton and it's fun. Or Gordon Lightfoot if you're Canadian, although he's not going much anywhere anymore. He's been so sick we kind of carry him around. You know, hi Gord, how? We play a little bit and people go, I can talk to people because I can play the guitar. That opens doors for me. Now, there are a lot of things that I can't do. I don't do a lot of hospital visits because we have elders that do elder work. It's biblical. It's insane. But we actually let them do biblical stuff. So they don't meet and talk about budgets. They do pastoral stuff. And in fact, it's kind of a joke in our family, church family, that if Patrick comes to see you, you're dying. I'm not really good at hospital visits because I've been in them too often. I guess I don't have enough empathy, but I know that. So I go do other things instead. We work with the homeless. It's, and also that kind of, kind of a, well, let me put it to you this way. We set up all kinds of barbecue things, and we were making food for the homeless in Cass Park, Google Cass Park, if you will. And the police came by. You can't serve food without a permit. Really? How much is the permit? He told us, well, you have to go get this form, then you have to go get this form, and you have to do this, and you have to do this. We said, so what's the penalty? He said, it's $500. We said, we'll pay you the $500 every time we come down. We're not doing it. And the police went off, talked for a little while, and came back and said, we didn't say anything, got in the car and drove off. Don't be too impressed. Detroit police are good at not seeing anything. But still, the point was valid that we were able to look at them and say, we're not playing. We're doing the will of the Lord. You do what you want to do. And it works. And it's great, people. I want you to think of the person in your school who is least liked. Right? Right? If you're thinking it's you, go for the second least liked one. Right? Target them. Be willing to give up friendships with others to serve them in some way. Try it. Now, right now, you're probably scared because if I lose my friends, what will happen? Oh, all it's going to be is you're going to be an early achiever because everybody else is going to lose their friends later. You graduate and people say, especially the girls, they'll cry at graduation. And I will write you forever, every day. And then, gone. What happened to them? Well, they've been married 8 times. They're now living, you know, in Albania. They're raising yaks. You know, that type thing. And, you know, no wonder I couldn't get them on Twitter. You know, that type thing. Sorry, another image just came in my head. I'm sorry, I got to quit that. But it was very amusing. Anyway, but it's not to be shared in public. My wife will be ever so proud. You're going to lose all your friends anyway, so why don't you start serving the Lord now? Be brave now. It's kind of cool whenever you do it. How do you do it? People say, but I don't know. I don't want to, you know, because my church is kind of boring. I'm not talking about inviting them to church. I'm talking about serving them in the name of the Lord. They will become Christ followers before you know it. And they will follow him, and the Lord will send the right person to them. Had a lady talking to me today because I've been talking to the adults about those two big things to say to people every day. A lady came to me and she said, in the hotel, we were talking about how we needed to remember those questions and what were those questions. And then they got in the elevator with the guy with a big tray full of food. And they said, oh, are you here with the church for the workshop? And he goes, no, I'm just taking some breakfast up to my drunk friend. And they tried to remember the questions to ask and they couldn't. So they got off, he got off. They're walking down, you know, hi, get to the room, and the guy stops and he goes, oh, wait, this isn't even my floor. God was throwing somebody at them. He got 20 feet away from them, stopped, and turned around, and he goes, wait a minute, you guys just said you're church people? And they were going, yes, we are. And he said, well, would you pray for us? Because we're starting a business and we need prayer. God was saying, all right, if you're willing to ask the questions, I'll put somebody beside you. And if you forget, I'll have them ask. I hear preachers all the time to convert people on airplanes. Good for them. I don't talk to people on airplanes. I'm too busy trying to stay alive. I don't like going through security because I never know what not to say. You know, do you have any weapons? What do you need? You know, that's no. And I don't want to explain this, but I just will say body cavity surges after the third or fourth one, they lose their novelty. But we still write. That's important. So you get on an airplane. And yes, I do preach like this. So I got on the airplane and I am so tired. They'd flown me down to Jacksonville, Florida to speak at a university and then fly back. And I was living in West Virginia at the time. We had to fly out of Pittsburgh. And so I'm just tired, I'm hot, I'm wrinkled as I can be because it's been a very long 20 hours. So now I'm sitting in the airplane, they're about to take off to fly back to West Virginia or to Pittsburgh. When this girl steps on the plane, she's 23, 25, something like that, right? But I'm ancient, so that's a girl. She steps, now the plane is 2/3 empty. There's only one seat beside me. And she's looking the length of the plane, and I'm thinking, don't you dare. And she sat beside me. And I'm going, all right, Lord. All right. So we're in the air. And all of a sudden, I notice I'm moister than I should be. And I look over, and she has spilled a can of ginger ale without realizing it all over me. This is the equivalent of the Holy Spirit sticking you with a stick. I went, ah. And she went, oh, I'm so sorry. And she went out, grabbed some napkins, and headed for me and went, nope, married. Now I'll take care of this. Thanks. You know, and she was, you know, we finally, I thought, sorted it out. And things got quiet again. I looked over and there were tears. And I went, it really is all right. I was going to burn this suit anyway. And she goes, no, it's that I've had a really rough week. And I went, oh, that's all I said. I didn't say, oh, lean back and tell me all about it. I just said, oh. So she leaned back and told me all about it. And this was years ago. Some of your parents might remember there was a whole bunch of sexual harassment problem in the Army. She was a sergeant. She'd been sexually harassed and not reported it, but somebody had witnessed it and reported it, and now she was in trouble for not reporting it. And so they'd sent her home for the week. It was Thanksgiving week. Well, they reviewed her case to see whether she still had a career. But as we're landing in Pittsburgh, she's not sure if her dad will be there because they didn't leave under good terms. Not sure if she has a career back there. Not sure if her dad will meet her there. And so we talked. We talked for about an hour. After a while, she goes, what do you do for a living? Now, I can answer that question four or five different ways. But I decided to go for minister. I said, I'm a minister of a church. She goes, oh, that's great. I probably needed to speak to a minister tonight. I was going, okay. Then she thought for a while and she goes, but I guess I still probably need to see a counselor, a therapist or something. I'm going, good one, God. And I walked her off the plane and her dad was there. And I left them when they were still hugging. But I wanted to explain that to you, to let you know that I'm also a reluctant servant, and God has to poke me too and say, look, pay attention, over here, over here. Look for the person that nobody else is touching and touch them. Look to the person that nobody else is listening to and listen to them. And be relentless in this. Never stop. These people need God, and they're not going to find him until they see your eyes. I don't know how many times I've had people look at me and say, you know, Patrick, I hear all of this, but I don't think I can believe in God. And I've got their eyes and I said, look here, watch me. If you can't believe in God, fair enough, just watch me. And if you find any other explanation for this, you let me know. More than one of those I've baptized in recent months. You want to believe in God? Watch me. Watch what happens next. And it's amazing what God will do for you if you do it God's way and be relentless. The world's relentless in getting you, by the way. It wants you. It's going to do things such as saying, it's a sale this weekend only. Like they're not going to have another one. You go, ah, and you run there to buy stuff. Or they'll say, if you love me, you'll trade your body for my pleasure for a little while. Really? Doing it God's way seems so stupid. It really does. People say, you're going to marry and you haven't tried anything out yet and all this. I'll tell you something. I married my girlfriend 30 years ago. When I saw her, it's like all my birthdays came at once. I knew I needed to date this girl. But she was American. She's from Colorado, so I didn't know how to date her. So I did research, which is what I knew how to do. Research Colorado. So we rode horses on our first date. We rode horses and rode horses until I was completely out of quarters. And then I didn't know. And some of you are going to think I'm kidding, and I'm not kidding. She needed to know who she was getting and linked up here with. People always ask me, how'd you know she was the one? She's the one that didn't mace me and run away. My wife might be the world's worst lover. Or I might be the world's worst lover. But because we've only been with each other, we're stupid enough to be happy. You do it the world's way, what happens? You got little ghosties in your head the rest of your life. Why would you want to do that? And those ghosties never age, so whoever you marry has no chance. None. But you do it God's way. It's amazing. You can tell people about that. You can look at them and say, I don't want any little ghosties in my head. Leave them going, what? What? Make them follow you. Don't explain it. Make them follow you. That's the thing. We try to do all the sales thing. It's a pretty day today, isn't it? Yeah, it is. See, Jesus made that and he loves you. You want to be baptized? Our church is having a thing. Don't do that. Here's a little thing you can try. Do something nice for somebody. When they say thank you, just say, Jesus says hi, and walk away. It's brilliant. You'll find them following you. Act like you don't see them. They're going, hey, 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 hey. You're going. You can turn around and go, oh, I'm sorry, I was listening to the angels. What did you say? Hang on just a minute. Yes, God? Don't kill this one. Fair. All right. It is amazing what happens. We give our people jobs at the end of every service. And we told them, we do this in a variety of ways. We said, we want you to do something which is out of your way, which is difficult, and tell the person, Jesus says hi. That's it. One lady in a snowstorm, very similar to what we've had today, because we have those all the time, grabbed a cart from a lady, an older lady in a lot, and said, I'll take it back for you. And the lady was going, you don't work here, do you, honey? And I went, no. Jesus just wanted to say hi. The lady began to cry. She had thought everybody had forgotten her, and now a stranger had told her Almighty God wanted to say hi. She made a friend. They're still friends to this day. That's the way this works. Be relentless. Will this always work? Are you kidding? I have been hit. We've had knives pulled on us, which is okay because we had guns. No, that would have been cool. I see your knife and I raise you. Anyway, bring the tank. No, we didn't have that. So we just threw a deacon at him and ran. Oh, people, when a knife is pulled, you don't have to be the fastest runner. You just have to not be the slowest runner. That's all. We have been rejected. I get hate mail. And yet, it would be very hard for you to find a happier person on the planet than me. Because I am so saved. And I know me. I'm not worth saving. Oh, I wish I were better. I wish her, but sin, whatever sins tempt you, tempt me. Well, within reason. Some of them, not everybody's tempted by all sins, right? But I'm tempted by just as bad sins as you are. I'll put it to you that way. I talked to an old guy once. This is one of those ooh moments. I was like 19 years old. He was this giant in the faith, and he was 70-something years old. So I asked him, I said, when does lust stop being a problem? And he looked at me and said, not yet. Oh! Sorry, threw up a little bit. And I found out something. It doesn't. Your opportunities to act upon your lust diminish somewhat. You're kind of like the old dog on the porch that still wants to chase cars. Car goes by, he still lifts his head and goes, woof. When does materialism go away? Consumerism, whatever you want to call it. When does peer pressure go away? Believe it or not, you still have peer pressure whenever you're old. When does desire for... And it's just, the fact is, we're always going to be a mess, but we're saved. So why can't we spread that around with other people and be agents of the Lord Most High? That's our job. We're in Cass Park, and the city of Detroit is trying to move the homeless out of Cass Park. There were 12 shelters there. They have now shut all but 4. The homeless aren't going away. They're just moving to under overpasses and the like. As we went down, we saw they'd shut another one. And my son-in-law, got to give him credit, it wasn't me, looked over at one and he said, we'd better search it. And for some reason, God had just kicked him in the head saying, we got to search that. He took a couple of other guys over. They pulled the plywood off. That's illegal. We don't care. They went in through. As you're stepping, your feet are crunching on crack files. Human sewage is everywhere. That's not safe either. And they come up on one landing and they find a mother and her two little girls still living in that. They said, come with us. They took them, they cleaned them up, they got them clothes, they got the kids' toys. They took them to the nicest shelter in Oakland County, which I know that sounds like still is a shelter. It's as nice as a Holiday Inn. And they got them in that one before the end of the day. Because we weren't going to let plywood stop us. We're going to be relentless. We're not going to let a do not enter sign stop us. Do not let anybody look at you and say, if you do that, you're no longer my friend. You can smile and say, but I'm still your friend. You're still my friend if I'm not yours. Doesn't matter. I'm going to love you anyway. And I'm going to do it in the name of Jesus. And then don't tell them why. Just walk on. And eventually, you're going to lead other people to Jesus that are going to do this as well. You're not going to go to church anymore. You're going to be the church. And yeah, you're going to gather on Sundays. Yeah, you'll gather a lot of times. Every time you can gather, you'll gather. But that's not being church. You're going to be the church when it's hard out there. And you're going to end up finding out something. That's a hoot. It's a hoot and a half. And then one day, you get to go see Jesus. People, it's so exciting. We don't know much about what happens whenever we get... Oh, dear, look at that. Got to quit. We don't know what's going to happen much whenever the end of time comes. So let me just do that for you. One day, you're going to die. We all do. It's all right. One out of one dies. Easy statistic to remember. One day, everybody looks at the lead. How's that? So you're going to, all of a sudden, you're going to walk up and there's going to be an angel standing in front of the gate of heaven. And he's going to smile. He's going to notice something about you. Jesus calls it his mark, but he's going to notice something about you. And he's going to step aside and wave you in. And as you walk in, there are these big circles of people you're walking through. And they're all cheering. They're so excited to see you. And you're going to look over and there's Paul and there's Mary and there's Joseph. And there's all these other things. And you're going, there's Jeremiah. I can finally figure out what he meant. I can ask him. And you walk on and you're going to look over and you're going to see things like the Chaldee and in other words, the sons of God, the friends of God, the 24 elders are going to be there, which I always warn our elders. Only 24 of you are going to make it, buddy. But whatever it is, the 24 elders are there. And as you come, then you're going to step up and you're going to see Jesus standing at the right hand of God. And I want to stress that. Because in the Bible, Jesus is pictured sitting at the right hand of God, except at the death of Stephen, and when the martyrs in Revelation approach him. Whenever people die who will belong to Jesus, he stands to receive you. Don't miss it for anything. Be relentless. God bless. Cheers.